Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. When it comes to income and poverty, Massachusetts continues to rank slightly better than the rest of the country. The latest census results show that the state's median household income was up, but the poverty level remained unchanged, hovering right around 8%. Our next guest says poverty and inadequate programs to deal with it are why homelessness continues to be a big problem. And he should know. Dr. Jim O'Connell, co-founder and president of Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, has spent decades offering coffee, blankets, and medical care to those who live on the city's streets. To mark the 30 years since the start of Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, Dr. O'Connell put together a book of photos and essays about his work. It's called Stories from the Shadows, Reflections of a Street Doctor. Here's Dr. O'Connell reading an excerpt.
These are the lives I've stumbled upon, not orderly or reasoned, and not the way lives are supposed to be. Many would challenge the patience of Job and make us wonder whether any loving God would allow such serendipity. Lives with more questions than answers, lives shrouded in the mysteries of fate and genetics. But as I write now into the early morning hours, I find richness and a fulfillment I can't quite explain. I have always had an irrational fear of boredom and ennui, and these wonderfully erratic pilgrims have protected me from any hint of complacency or routine.
Dr. O'Connell joined us in September to talk about the book, which officially launches next week. At this official start of the holiday season, we thought we would revisit that conversation, which started with him explaining his effort to follow and try to determine the health outcomes of people who are chronically homeless.
Some of this came from the frustration of we were doing all this work and, you know, you want to know, is it working? Is this
right?
You know, and who are we caring for? So we decided to pick about half the people we knew to be living on the streets, about 250 people living on the streets of Boston all year long now. Many more people live during the summer, but these are the hardcore all year long, never come into the shelter folks. So we decided to follow about half of them. It turned out to be 119 just to see what happened. And to our horror, about half of those folks died within about 7 years, even though their average age was only in the 40s. Hmm. And even though they had thousands and thousands of emergency room visits and hospitalizations, and we were taking care of them. So it became almost an indictment of our own team and our own program and certainly of our own healthcare system. And then when we looked at why they died, we started thinking, oh, they must be dying of, you know, frostbite and things like that. Turned out the leading cause of death for this group was cancer. Huh. The second leading cause was heart disease. So they were dying of things that, as doctors, we should be doing a much better job of either preventing or, if we can't prevent, certainly of taking care of.
So I guess you think the message from that is housing is almost a healthcare issue.
I think housing, you know, with some, I say this with a little bit of reservation, I think housing is the absolutely essential but maybe not sufficient solution to the problem of homelessness. I don't think you can solve it without housing. What I think, if I step back and look at it more like a doctor side, I think the furies that pursue people to be on the streets, to be in the shelters permanently, don't go away just when somebody goes back into a house. And what we find is that those furies can manifest themselves in all sorts of new ways as somebody gets placed in housing. And the example I would give you is that many folks become street savvy. They get very, very good at knowing how to make it on the street corners and how to be outside Fenway Park and ask people for a nickel or a dime. But when they go into a studio apartment in, you know, Dorchester, away from everything they know and alone in that apartment, many of them struggle with that overwhelming loneliness that is in their lives, where they have no family, they have no friends, they don't have a real community, and the only community they know is back outside. And all of the skills for surviving outside become pretty useless when the skills you need is how to turn on a gas stove and how to manage the remote control of a TV.
When you started, you tell a great story in the book about really the nurses teaching you what this was going to mean, and you started by washing the feet of folks who are homeless.
I did. I walked into Pine Street Inn I had just finished my last rotation. It was in the intensive care unit at MGH. Thought I knew everything by that time. I was finished with 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency, and walked in and the nurses looked at me like I had three heads, telling me that they had been doing this work for about 15 or 16 years without the help of doctors or hospitals. So they took away my stethoscope, took away all my tools, and made me soak feet. It's a soothing service to give to someone. And what I hadn't understood at the time that I realize later is it completely flips the power structure. So instead of me being the doctor with my stethoscope in your chest and looking at your eyes and ears, it puts us as doctors at the feet and the person that we're taking care of really in charge.
And why is that important?
We came to see it as the entree into real primary care. So take care of the feet, which have all sorts of issues. When you start to do that, then they will invite you to do more. And that was miraculous for me to learn, because I had grown up in a world where you had 10 or 15 minutes to be in a room with someone, understand what their problem was, diagnose, treat, and move on to the next person.
I visited you at the Boston Night Center, and I have a piece of tape from that visit, and it's an exchange between you and a patient. Let's listen to this a little bit.
What's your name?
I don't tell you my name.
Okay, how about your first name?
I don't tell you
okay,
my name.
That's all right.
I don't want
all right.
you to know my name. Leon.
Leon, okay.
My name is Leon.
Nice to meet you, Leon. I just want to be sure you're okay.
I'm not okay. I need, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you what I need.
Okay.
I've been doing bad in the streets. I had no money. I had no food. I've been walking around the streets all day long. I've been deadly.
And so that was an exchange. Is that typical? He doesn't want to tell you his name. You don't not sure if it is really his name. So when you talk about the feet being an entree into primary care, is that something that you find would be particularly effective with someone like Leon, who obviously is not ready to completely open up to you?
I think it would be perfectly appropriate. I think what I hear in listening to that now, and I can barely remember it, what I hear that is so familiar is someone very reluctant to tell us anything, and then shares slowly his name, but then is kind of feeling us out to see what we can do to help. And what we can do really to win him over in that case was give him some food or give him some socks or give him some underwear, something that didn't come charged with, are you hearing voices? Are you having chest pain? So I think that's the lesson that the nurses taught us, that you have to sort of find your way into engaging somebody. But most important, it's being quiet and present and consistent.
But how challenging is that as a medical professional? I think there have to be numerous challenges, not just from Leon, but I imagine from many patients. It's not as if you can say to someone, fill this prescription, follow this regimen, and you're guaranteed that you, or at least you can predict a type of improvement. You can't. I mean, the challenges are enormous. So if you have questions about being able to take care of basic medical needs, how does that affect your satisfaction as a medical professional?
It's certainly challenging, but it also was challenging in the context of these are folks who have a complex burden of medical problems mixed with mental illness issues, mixed with substance use issues. And if you look at it just from the simple doctor perspective for a moment, this is complicated stuff, and it's the kind of stuff you know, you went to school and went to residency, and interesting, complicated things are what we try to do. They will teach you, and they certainly taught me, all of the weaknesses in the mainstream system way before it's realized anywhere else. So as I was looking at the push within my own profession was all about productivity, how many people you can see in an hour, how much you can produce. And if you want to change the life of any of these people or get to them, you're going to have to take a few months having coffee, soaking feet, doing whatever it is to win them over. And none of that is either valued or taught or paid for by my own profession.
You've been doing this for so long, for decades now, and I wonder what you think about the public sentiment toward folks who are homeless. Has that changed at all? Are people more sympathetic or are people apathetic?
I have mixed feelings, and I suspect the sentiments are mixed. I think the problem of homelessness, despite over these past 30 years having had fits and starts of thinking it would be a temporary problem that we will solve, I think that the numbing persistence of homelessness has really inured people into what they're starting to see as an intractable problem. And it breeds us to think of it as an annoying problem. And you can see in many cities across the country, almost everything people do, cities have banned people from feeding homeless people. Many parks won't let you sleep there. So this kind of a mean sentiment coming, a wave of that. At the same time, I think there's an awful lot of hope on the horizon that more creative housing programs, especially those within rich services to address the many needs that we're talking about, offer huge potential to housing at least those people who have been chronically homeless. What I worry about, though, when I step back, is I think this is a complicated problem. And as I step further and further back, I start to see it as an end-stage manifestation of poverty. And I don't think homelessness is a product of poor housing. I mean, it certainly is that, but it's a product of education that wasn't right, welfare that wasn't done very right, child welfare that was probably not good, people who have grown up with all the social determinants of health that poverty brings, and that what we are seeing is people far downstream, and the real need we have is to fix those systems. I think I mentioned that in the book, I kind of have come to look at homelessness as a prism that you hold up to society, and what gets refracted are the weaknesses in all of our sectors.
Also, you mentioned Long Island, and of course, in your book, you write about that, the closing of Long Island when Boston Mayor Marty Walsh had to close the bridge to Long Island last October, and of course, it threw a bunch of people into a tailspin. It was the closing of the shelter and other services on the island, and which was why I visited you at the Knight Center to talk about what you were seeing, and the city has since opened a temporary shelter and is increasing the beds there. Is that enough?
I think what the city has done to get that shelter up and going has been, you know, remarkable and done with breakneck speed. I think the problem when the bridge closed at Long Island was an overwhelming natural disaster. But I think what was highlighted for me, among other things, is one, despite all our hopes and how much we've invested in thinking that low-income housing is going to end the problem of homelessness, we've just never been able to have enough housing units to really affect that. And now we're seeing, in fact, this summer, as you know, the shelters are more crowded than they've ever been. The new shelter that the mayor has just opened, which is fabulous, is almost the first day it opened, had 30 or 40 people that needed to sleep on the floor because it was filled to capacity. While we're focusing our advocacy and our funding appropriately on creating more housing, I worry that we're leaving behind the care of those people who are still struggling on the streets. I think all of us, from the shelter providers to the housing providers, are very frightened by these numbers. We don't know what it means except to say that, you know, it's more than we've ever seen before at a time when we had hoped the numbers would be going radically down. I think, if I were really candid, one of the problems is also in the rhetoric that we use about the problem, because we've been really focused appropriately on ending chronic homelessness. All of the federal funding now is focused on ending chronic homelessness. And that's the laudable and appropriate goal. But I think it's also been couched in the fact that we've had failed social policies, like shelters have been a failed social policy. We were managing homelessness rather than ending it. And consequently, I think money has just been taken away from sheltering and put into housing at a time when I think that might be premature. I think we need both. Last winter time, no one died on the streets of Boston. And I think it was because Boston, as it always does, came to the fore. The Knight Center was open. North Station and South Station opened their doors to let people stay there. The airport allowed people to stay. And during that really bitter cold winter, for the first time in my 30 years, no one died.
So what do you do next? You're 67 years old?
I love doing this work. And as long as I can do it with all the wonderful partners I've been with in Boston, it's you can't say no to this job. It's a great job.
Jim, thanks very much for being with us.
Deb, thank you. I appreciate it.
Dr. Jim O'Connell is co-founder and president of Boston Healthcare for the Homeless. He joined us on Radio Boston back in September, and you can find a link to his book of photos and essays at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. This is Radio Boston.